and I just learned the best spell of all.
What's that?
Sleep.
Welcome back to My Alchemical Bromance. This is Eric Arneson, and in this episode, I'm going to be interviewing Keith Ross, musician, magician, master of We the Hallowed, head dude for Dakota Slim, maybe the only dude on Dakota Slim. And we don't get around to introducing the podcast until a couple minutes in, so just sit back and relax and enjoy our excellent, excellent conversation.
Goth is getting pretty mainstream.
I guess it is now.
What isn't popular, you know? That's the thing I'm having an issue with.
Isn't popular?
Yeah, what isn't popular? You can find a community or a circuit of
there
people
are so
and,
many,
like, any...
I know. And there are so many people, right?
Yeah, there's
like,
so many, yeah.
Like, how many people have to like something before it's considered popular?
Right.
Do they have to be in one spot?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
I guess
that makes sense. No. I mean, it would in music, I would think.
But different
musical genres, like, locally, I would say.
If you had,
like... Locally, post-rock is very popular in Portland.
That's true.
But it's also really popular, no matter what.
But if you had 10 people from every state...
Yeah.
...downloading one of your albums... that'd be, like...
That would be a lot of people.
500 people, right?
Yeah.
And 10 people in every state, like, they probably don't even know each other. They might just be scattered around the state. Like, let's say they didn't even know each other.
Right.
Is your music popular?
Maybe there is, like popular in the sense that it gains traction easily.
Yeah?
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I don't know if popular has much to do with just populace.
Oh, popularity is like a vector.
Right, right.
So a change in attention.
An easier grab, yeah.
Yeah. Like, you're easy to find and...
Pop music, you know?
Yeah.
Because there is, like, this...
Well, pop music's a formula, though. I mean, pop music, they build it specifically to talk to...
To become popular.
Yeah. It's a trick.
Exactly,
A trap.
It's the psychoacoustics.
Yeah.
It's like, was it frequencies over 5K elicit... interest.
Really?
Yeah, and so I studied this in college, and
How do we generate a noise
like
that? I
know, right? No, I mean, I've often considered messing with psychoacoustics with, like, the podcasts and stuff. I do a bit, like...
Hold on.
...on the album, but, like, I don't know, there's something, like,
I think you should introduce yourself.
Oh, yeah, hi. My name is Keith Ross.
This is My Alchemical Bromance.
This is his Alchemical Bromance.
And this is Keith Ross.
Hi.
We're finishing the triangle, the magic triangle, the
That's
trifecta
right.
of Portland. We had
weirdo
a name.
Occult. We did.
Yeah, weirdo occult podcasts. Because, you know, so far I've been on the Alex cast a couple times. Mm-hmm. I've been on your podcast, Prag Magic. Mm-hmm. Alex has been on your podcast. You've been on his podcast.
Yep.
And the only leg of that we didn't fix was us. Sorry.
I think when we were all hanging out.
We
recently,
tried.
Your question was, who's the asshole here? Who hasn't had somebody else on their podcast?
It was me,
turned out...
I'm the asshole.
It was you,
Hashtag asshole.
Hasshole. I was thinking, speaking of the name, My Alchemical Bromance, I know you didn't pick it, but why isn't it My Alchemical Bromance?
Why isn't it?
I was just thinking
I don't
about
know.
That. I was like, damn.
Oh, that is a good question. I'll ask Matt.
Yeah, Matt.
Why not
as
My Alchemical Bromance?
If you could send him a note for me and just be like, hey, why isn't it this?
Yeah. I mean, you know, maybe if we had more brewing on. But
right. This would be in conjunction with what the podcast was originally, which is... more beer based.
And I mean, that doesn't happen all the time. I mean, we're drinking beer right now. I'm drinking beer.
You're
drinking a pink cider.
I'm drinking. Thanks, Eric.
Tell me what that's about. Like, why is it pink?
It's, it tastes pink.
Yeah?
Yeah. It tastes like pink beer.
Is it like strawberries or something?
It tastes like drunk apples.
Drunk apples? Okay, mm-hmm. cool. I'm drinking a,
It tastes like a fraternity, were they bobbing for apples, but instead it was beer.
Yeah. It's more like a sorority.
There you go.
Perhaps, okay.
There you go, yeah. A rosé.
Well, I hope it's delicious.
It's good, yeah.
Good, good. All right, so...
I haven't been drinking, so this is my, like, my cheat, because I can't just go straight in.
Oh, right.
Like,
well,
I had been.
I mean, you know what happens, you know, if you haven't been drinking for a little while and you start again, it really loosens you up, so this is going to be a... This is going to be a tell-all episode.
Oh, goodness.
We're going to get to the guts of Keith Ross.
The nitty-gritty. What do you want to know?
Well, I kind of want to know a couple things. All right, so when I first met you, it was like... Was it a year ago? It was about a year ago, right?
Yeah.
And you had like 10 different names.
Oh, yeah.
Tons of different identities.
Yeah.
You'd
still kind of do.
Gone through the whole thing with your. You'd had like a. During the big solstice. What was that 2018? The big solstice. 2017.
The August. You mean the?
Yeah. The big. The full
the eclipse,
solar
the total,
eclipse.
Yeah.
Not the solstice. The big solar eclipse.
Yeah, yeah.
Where it was. I mean, you know, I've told the story of my eclipse experience.
Right, right.
You had a pretty intense eclipse experience. It ended up like
life changing.
Yeah, it changed your life, and you sort of. It kind of went on for a while, and then you did another eclipse ritual just this January.
Yes.
That
kind
was,
of not bookending it, but yeah, totally.
But
another.
Kind of trying to. What were you?
Aww. That was right on cue.
That, yeah. So, what was the intent of this other ritual?
Well, I've been going through. I guess you could call it sort of like a chapel perilous situation, where it was a lot of my magical experiences and my experiences with. I don't know. Let's just say, you know, kind of recalibrating life in pretty much all of its facets.
Yeah.
Was, you know, hard to tell what was kind of outside of my imagination or was actually... I'm trying not to sound as crazy as it sounds in my head talking about it.
You're not going to sound like the craziest person I've found on the podcast, so don't worry.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I just mean, like, it was... It all kind of was a tundra of, you know, this psychical kind of resurgence and reformation in my life, but it was also mirrored in just the day-to-day isms, you know?
Yeah.
And so it was, to me, the January one was more about kind of gratitude or kind of, you know, recalibrating again, but in a happy sort of way.
Yeah.
The first one was out of desperation.
Right, right.
So this next one was... You more of a touchstone, kind of.
Okay, so you, it was sort of, it was maybe like a, it was like a refocusing, kind of, right? Like you had, you had time to actually stop and think about what you were doing, and
so
time to sort of.
The August one was like I blew up the ship, and then the next one was like I managed to find my way to land, so now let's build something.
Well, there's going to be more eclipses coming up.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So
well, I thought the last. And I don't know how much it had to do with the eclipses, so to speak. You know, I don't know. I don't know what I was doing right, but I was doing something right.
Yeah,
because a lot of change came in so many drastic ways. But, yeah, I don't know how much it has to do with the eclipses themselves. And I know that we're done with the major ones for a while. Right.
Yeah, I think the next big one is 2024.
So that's,
so that's,
you know,
it's going to be in
that's
Texas.
That's a variable I can't really experiment with.
Yeah. Well, all right. So then let's talk about, like, you've got some cool projects, right?
Yeah.
Right. So you've got We the Hollowed.
Yeah.
You've got Pragmagic, which is a part of We the Hollowed.
Yeah, everything's kind of part of We the Hollowed, everything that I do.
Uh-huh. So let's start with We the Hollowed. Like, describe this puppy.
So We the Hollowed was... initially supposed to be an art collective that was kind of, it was a bunch of disparate individual artists that kind of unified together under a folklore, and we all kind of banded together to kind of create the tenets, and it was a lot of the pageantry of it, and the artistic idea of setting up a collective or a, you know, I don't know, just a church in a way.
Yeah.
And then it turned into a very pragmatic thing where we started coming together and putting out compilations and zines. And, you know, now we have the website, which is doing, kind of picking up the slack of what Disinfo was doing, or trying, starting to. I shouldn't say it's not there yet. But so it's this multimedia intent on magical folkloric ideologies that are apparent within each artist that's working. Huh. If that makes sense.
We'll come back to the disinfo thing,
right.
Because that's an interesting story, and I bet you a lot of people out there are kind of curious as to what happened to it. But
yeah.
So out of We the Hollowed, you've got your music stuff, like Dakota Slim, and are you doing other music stuff? Is that your main project?
I was. So Dakota Slim is something I've been doing since I was 14.
Oh.
Yeah. I was, you know, recording music on cassette tapes and too shy and too kind of felt too goofy or ridiculous to be, you know, taken seriously by my friends, so I'd put it under a different name.
Mm-hmm.
And this might circle back to why I had so many different names and all the other things, or different personas. It's kind of a way to exercise different ideas without feeling tethered to, you know, any of the gunk
and,
that
is
Keats Ross or whatever. So Dakota Slim has been the solo thing I've been doing for, I don't know, a long, long time now.
And you're still using that name.
Still using it. It was in hibernation for a while, and I had a band or two. And I was talking to Mary, my girlfriend, the other day. We were kind of laughing because anytime I'm going through something heavy, like I was talking about earlier, I end up creating some big thing. And it's usually a record. It's usually an album. And so I've got over, like, 11 albums out because, you know.
That's amazing, though.
There's no, but, like, the journey of he's had 11 nervous breakdowns kind of thing, you know.
Yeah.
Like, so it's I don't know how much of it's just more of a exorcism, you know. But, yeah, it's been my main vex, and it's my main entry point into magic, too.
Yeah. Audiomancy.
Audiomancy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, well, first, tell me, like, or tell the listeners. The listeners are probably going to... I've heard your music, and I really enjoy it. It's... I don't know how to describe it. I don't have good music describing words, but it's got this sort of... I don't want to call it folkish, but it's got this kind of, like... there's something in it that almost reminds me of sort of Tom's Waits-ish sort of stuff, like a kind of, like... smacking, banging noise, and then some like guitar-y stuff going on, and then weird electronic-y stuff. How do you describe it when you tell? If somebody asks you, like,
no,
let's say a baby boomer asks you, like, "Oh, what kind of music do you play?"
I say that's a good question. You know, like my grandfather was always a hard one because he'd always tell me to be a country singer, or something. You know, and I was like, well, you know, I can't. It was hard to show him what I was doing, you know.
It's urban post-country.
Yeah. I mean, and there's, you know, for lack of trying to come up, because, you know, jokingly we were calling it Desert Goth.
Desert Goth?
With some friend jokingly referred it to. So now I can't describe it without being somewhat ironic, you know, because it's more fun talking about what it sounds like in those genre terms than anything, but it's just singer-songwriter, just off his rocker. Off his rocker. Oh. I like office rocker.
Office rocker.
Yeah.
Neckties and banjos.
Yeah. Yeah, but
so all right. So
I liked your blurb. If I could have on the back of an album just ellipses. It's ellipses and then your name.
It's
Eric L. Arneson.
Yeah. All right. So then, audiomancy. So you use it as sort of like a sigil creation device.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I think more so the audiomancy comes in how I've learned to construct the music, and it craft in its own way of, you know. I would say parapsychological kind of methods to get ideas and to get even like chord structures sometimes. Or
give me an example, like what would you do?
Well, I had a thing, I call them DIMs.
Yeah?
They're like these sessions I have that I was doing since I was a kid. I wrote about it, I'll send you a thing, but it's I used to make these tape samples where I would cut up you know, cassette tapes, and I learned how to glue them together and kind of make these mutant, like, tones and tussles.
Oh, wow.
And I found that if I did it in such a way, or, like, I sat and meditated in such a way, I would hit some, I would hit trances.
Yeah, okay.
And so it grew into me using, recording me hitting, like you were saying, kitchen sink percussion, but in a trance rhythm, and then, you know, finding a melody or something, like, yeah, and it's...
I can kind of see that in the way it sounds.
And it's kind of, it gets psychotronic. I used to have, like, a an old cupboard that I put a twin mattress in, and I put a amp in there. And, like, I would go in there and turn on the amp, and I would turn on, like, the tape loops and do things and just kind of roll and get with these, like, rhythms and things. And, you know, I would have these ideas of, I wouldn't say visions necessarily, but, yeah, you know, visions.
Yeah. Musical visions.
Musical visions. Yeah. Concepts would come to me, and, you know, I would hit these spaces where I started noticing that if I would play something with it, or if I'd hit something, it was like an anchor to keep me from getting too wily. And that's kind of where the formulation of, like, working within the American song structure, like, I get a lot, because it's kind of the language of which I can communicate what all this other shit is. Instead of, you know, have you noticed that, like, all these, like, weird, esoteric, occult musician types, it's all just, like, noise music?
A lot of it is.
A lot of it is.
Oh, yeah.
But to me, the whole point was, like, translating what that is in a way that I could translate it.
Do you think it's possible for other, for your audience, for your listeners, to use your music in a magical sense?
That's a good
question. In a trance-inducing way?
I think it could be. I often thought, I sold for a little bit the drum sessions I was doing. And, like, the early 20-aughts or whatever, I was selling some of my tape loops and stuff to, like, hip-hop artists as, like, weird rhythms and ramshackle things. And I would get feedback sometimes that it's like, oh, shit, that's other world, you know? Or, like, because it, I don't know, I'm sure a lot of other things were used to help induce a sort of trance, you know.
But speaking of which, tomorrow is bicycle day, you know.
I don't know that.
Tomorrow,
what's a bicycle?
A bicycle. Tomorrow's the anniversary of the first time Albert Hofmann took LSD on purpose.
Oh.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I should know that.
It's, I think it was, I want to say it was 1953 or something.
Okay.
Or something like that.
No.
Maybe it's older than that. Long,
I'm surprised I don't know that. Yeah.
Well, now you do. I have it in my phone. It
what are you
going to
do?
Here. Me? Well, it's also the beginning of Passover, so I'm going to go to a
pink
Seder.
Moon, too.
It's a pink moon?
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to go to a Seder and not take drugs.
Word. Yeah, consciously not.
Consciously take. Not take drugs.
But if someone put it in my...
If someone, you know, slipped it into my kosher wine...
It's the first time Eric L. Arneson didn't consciously take LSD.
Oh, God.
It's a holiday.
I don't want that to happen.
Yeah. No. But yeah, I see what you mean. Like, I don't... I think I see where you're getting, like, the psychedelic aspects. And, yeah, I've definitely had my time with psychedelics, but I've never used them for
music.
Music, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Do you when you're doing the audiomancy stuff, when you're doing the stuff with the music, do you ever like encode spell work into the music, like a sigil or like a hyper sigil sort of situation?
So I would do things where there were a time where I sat in a kind of, like, circle with different chord structures that were basic sigils. And there would be a thing where I'd hit rhythms. You know, there's, like, all sorts of different methods. But as far as, like, I have friends that have done, like, MIDI, and they'll draw the sigil in MIDI.
Oh.
You know? And it's almost, like, very literal about it. But, no, mine has been more... what comes out, what I see, it's always been true to what it starts out as. So, like, for example, there was this one song where I was getting this, like, oh, this is a crazy story, but I was getting this, like, druha, druha, you know, sort of rhythm, and I would build off of that and hit these, like, runner highs.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the thing. It's, you know, there's only other time I've kind of hit these levels have been, like, heavy exertion.
Uh-huh.
You know? And I envision this, like, coyote demon, like, you know, witch goddess. This, like, almost kind of New Mexican Anasazi folktale-ish face
coyote
thing.
Coyote demon witch
you
goddess.
Know? You know, it's some, yeah. some like, it's like a little kid would kind of envision. Yeah. And this happens to me all the time. I, in my later years, as I'm investigating this stuff, because this is all, this was all just kind of a weird experiment I was doing. I didn't really have any form or logic around it.
Yeah.
When I was starting, I would discover things that I was seeing or witnessing that correlated. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I found out that there's these Zoroastrian Persian beasts called Druze. Or the Druze, and it's like how I spelt it, and they kind of were.
They're what you saw.
They're what I saw. Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's cool.
And so there's a lot of weird tethers in that, and so yeah, it's been trying to. I don't know what, if at all, I can like decipher from it on a big scale, but it's definitely been. Just revealing to me is like the most, the purest way I can get to tap in any of this is through art. It's
yeah.
Like through creating. Yeah.
Sounds like something you just got to keep working on and,
yeah.
and, you know, take note of those visions.
Right.
Because those are, you know, that's cool.
Yeah. So, and they form a lot of, you know, stories. I was working on a comic book that was kind of built on them and like a lot of projects, but they really do fill that.
Yeah,
Imaginarium thing. Excuse me.
That's cool.
A little cider burp. Notice you didn't hear it because oh, it's a cider burp.
Right, cider burps are silent. Yeah,
cider burp rules.
Although that's a really good microphone, I'm sure it just picked it up.
Oh, that's gonna be gross.
It's a cheap microphone.
Just a really quiet burp. Anyway,
All right. So, all right, audiomancy. That's a fascinating topic.
So, and I took the term. The term. Is from a local writer named, his name is Ezra Sanzer Bell.
Oh, I know him.
Yeah, yeah. And he
wrote
a book called Astro Music.
I have that book.
And it's about the correlation between, like, you know, the horoscope or the, astrology and musical theory and all that. And his second book was called Audiomancy.
Oh.
And I call what I do Audiomancy just because in the literal sense of what it is, you know, kind of song sorcery. But I do always want to give credit because I think his website is Audiomancy
okay.
or something.
Yeah, I met him. He took a class for me. I think, I can't remember which, I taught two classes for the Portland Underground Grad School. One of them was the history of cryptography and the other one was the history of secret societies.
Very cool.
I think he took the history of cryptography from me, and he gave me that book at the end of the class.
Nice.
So I've read a little bit of it.
It's an interesting book.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very theoretical, you know.
Yeah, I'll have to get back into it again. I know exactly where it is. It's sitting on my shelf in a spot that I look at frequently. So.
But yeah, I always have to preface that, you know, because in our community, it's like, you know, those terms I feel can be like. Taken or taken for granted, and I just want to make sure that, you know, I borrow the term knowingly.
Yeah.
But it has nothing to do with his audiomancy. It's
you know what? I'll make sure that there's a link to his website
there you go.
In the show notes.
Yeah. I mean, it's important. It's important, you know. But yeah.
So you, okay, all right, I'm gonna totally just.
180?
Split off in a different direction. You were talking about all this stuff. It made me think, some of the stuff you're talking about made me think of Gary Lachman.
Yeah, yeah.
And then when I thought about Gary Lachman, I was suddenly reminded, you had Mitch Horowitz on your freaking podcast.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
How'd you get Mitch Horowitz on your podcast?
I asked.
You just asked it. He was like, yes.
Well, no, that's not true. You know what? That's not true.
Okay.
I wrote a review of The Miracle Club.
Oh.
For WeTheHollow.org.
Okay.
And it did really well. It got
lots
some
of
traction.
Yeah.
And he picked it up and... I used that as kind of a, hey, while
as
a, you're...
As an in.
While you're, yeah, sharing this. Oh. And he was absolutely a gorgeous dude.
Yeah, like, I loved the sweet. Conversation you guys had.
Nice. I mean, it was great, yeah.
It was a really good episode. And it was one of those, like, he's kind of a big name now.
He's having a moment.
He's having a moment, and... Yeah. And it was just sort of, I was just really shocked when it happened, you know, because he was like your seventh episode or something like that.
He's my, yeah, it was like, I don't know, I'm only on like episode 20.
Yeah. So he was, so you, like when I saw it happen, I was like, how did you do that with so few?
Yeah.
But then I remember like Occulture's first guest was John Crowley, who wrote the,
oh, really?
Who wrote the Egypt series.
I didn't know that.
Which is an incredible set of books. So
honestly,
I guess sometimes you just have to ask.
There's only a few, and we know
the
people. There's only a few that actually gauge your worth by listenership or how many episodes you've done. You know? And those people, you know, are kind of spoil the whole carton. But
yeah.
At the same time, like honestly, everybody, this community is brilliant. Vibrant, beautiful. Everybody's wanting to help, and wanting to be heard.
It's true, and it's it's so diverse. There's so many different branches of the community, and even like in occult podcasting, you know, there's so much room for all of us,
right?
You know, because I mean, I feel like my pod. I don't know. Does my pod? Do I? So like you get a glitch bottle.
Yeah.
And Glitch Bottle is pretty much all grimoire stuff.
Yes, yeah.
You go to, you know, Rune Soup, and
but that's more
he's,
cold personality.
Yeah, Rune Soup, that's true. You know? That's true. That's true.
I mean, you are too to a degree because I feel that you elevate the material, like you as personality elevate whatever's being talking.
Am I like a
talking about?
Do I have like some sort of? Are you trying to tell me that I'm popular?
I'm trying to say that you're pop music. Yeah. You're pop music, baby.
I'm
star
like
of stage and screen.
I'm like the forgotten K-pop of podcasting.
I think it's pretty well known within the community that My Alchemical Bromance don't fuck around. You know,
yeah,
it's like it's an honor to be a guest on it right now.
You don't have to, like, it's way too late to butter me up.
I know, right? No, but seriously, if now that we're talking about it,
yeah,
maybe there should be more of that, you know,
buttering each other up,
or you know what I mean, just like more of a, I think it can get weird and competitive in any art form.
Yeah, I think you're right. And, you know, I mean, I guess that's one reason why I'm glad that like you, me, and Alex are all you, Alex, and I, just in case my mom listens.
Oh, yeah.
You, Alex, and I, you know, we don't really always aim at the same stuff, but, you know, there's overlap.
Yeah.
But it's really fun that we're able to, like, collaborate and talk to each other and be like, oh, here's a guest, you know? So, like, Alex and I both had Vanessa Kindle on, and that was pretty fun, but our episodes were super different.
She's the goat.
Sumerian.
Yeah.
Sumerian.
Yeah, she bought a record of mine because of you or your...
Good.
Podcast, yeah,
cool.
Super sweet. Talk to her for a bit, Can't wait to have her on.
Yeah, she's interesting. Like one of the things that's so great about it is like she has nerded out so hard on the Sumerian stuff.
Yeah.
And she's not done, right? Like there's so much left to discover, and she's always like coming up with new stuff. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I, you know, with the whole move I was going through, I would have had her on, but there was a passing idea that if she's on Alex's and Eric's, maybe it's too much, but
give her a month.
Yeah. You know, yeah. I don't know either.
Yeah. I don't know. Well, you know, there are definitely like occult authors out there who, when they publish a book, they kind of hit the circuit.
Oh, yeah.
And they show up on a ton of podcasts. Like Robert Bonomo is a good one.
Yeah.
He came on my podcast, and I think I might have been his, I don't know if I was his first for, because he published put out this YouTube documentary on the
tarot,
which was really good, and he sort of like hit the circuit and showed up on a bunch of podcasts at once. And Jason Miller does the same thing, you know.
Right.
So you know, I guess we are a marketing outlet.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, kind of in our worst days.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But to me, it was always like just a selfish way to glean knowledge. I've always been kind of a...
It's a super great way to meet and get really interesting conversations with super fascinating people.
I've always had just such a hard time... You know, I was a ruffian when I was younger and just always had a hard time with authority or, you know...
Oh, yeah.
Never really had a mentorship or any of that. And so this has given me an avenue to, like, really glean from... folks like yourself, you know. All, especially going through this crazy metaphysical tundra I was talking about earlier.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, having the ability to just reach out and be like, hey, do you mind if I pick your brain about this?
Yeah, yeah.
It's incredible. Well, I think that's my thing, though, too. I leave the heavy lifting for guys like yourself.
I don't do the heavy lifting. I do medium lifting, and I leave the heavy lifting for other people.
Well, you know what I mean.
Like, yeah.
That's not... That was never my intention, was to have an occult podcast where I'm, like, the occult podcast.
Right.
You know what
right.
I mean?
Yeah.
It was always, like, this is a personal kind of grimoire of, like, me, you know... It's about art. Like, Pragmagic is... What's more pragmagic than art, right?
Absolutely.
And so, like, it's not supposed to be the resource. Because I can't. There are better men than I. There are better women than I to do it, you know? And so, yeah, I've just been super lucky. And then I gotta kick it up a notch, catch up.
So before We the Hollowed...
Yeah, yeah.
You were involved in Disinfo.
No, I was in Disinfo. We the Hollowed has been around for a while.
Okay, okay. But you were involved with Disinfo before it.
Before We the Hollowed became, the blog.
Yeah,
so I was in Disinfo. It was.
It was you
a
and
a total dream
Thad
come
McCracken.
True. I mean, it was a ton of people.
Yeah.
A ton of writers.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, I, you know, the Disinfo Book of Lies was such a. Major turning point in my young life. I had grown up with Robert Anton Wilson. My father knew him, and Timothy Leary was around, and Marilyn Ferguson. I had all these people in my life, but I didn't get to know them for myself.
Because you were too busy being a rebel.
I was too busy being
a rebel against the rebels.
No, I was too busy being just young.
Oh, yeah,
you know?
Right.
Just a kid.
Oh, yeah, I guess that was a long time ago.
Yeah, and so when I was older, finding, you know, the Disinfo Book of Lies and having everybody, Grant Morrison, William S. Burroughs, Genesis Peorage, Austin Osmond Spare, I mean, everybody is in that book.
Yeah.
For my formative shit. So getting to be a writer on Disinfo or, like, share a masthead, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
With other people.
That must have been amazing.
It was such a high five, even though it didn't resemble at all what it used to be.
Right.
The Richard Metzger years were long gone.
I know. Yeah. Those were amazing years. Yeah. I got the Disinfo DVD set. Like, this is after the TV show.
Disinfo TV?
Come and gone, but like he put out some DVDs. Mm-hmm. Oh, man, I loved those. I watched those episodes over and over and over again. And then
such
the Disinfo conference with... Oh, yeah. But then, of course, Grant Morrison's talk on Chaos
Simple
Magic.
SimpoCon, man.
Man, that was... And then, that was... So... Disinfo died.
If I can just say real quick, throughout all the interviews I've done with people that I find influential, a lot of them source that book. A lot of them, but especially a lot of them source the Grant Morrison Disinfo God.
That was such an incredible talk.
In it of itself was an egregore, you know?
Oh, for sure. He sigilized his sigil talk for sure or something. I mean, it's funny. Like, I didn't watch that. I didn't get a hold of that until after I'd already been practicing for quite a while.
Right.
And Chaos Magic was never really my thing. But after watching that, I was sort of like, oh, maybe I should try some Chaos Magic.
Well, and I think, So, I mean, that's another episode in and of itself. Because I've been having this really weird internal, like, psychical tug of war with Chaos Magic, what it is now, what it's regarded as, what it, you know...
What
it was
really...
intended to be, maybe.
I haven't really kept my finger on the pulse of that.
And I don't think there's a pulse to be a finger kept on.
Yeah.
You know? I really do believe that it's for, you know, the mutts. I believe it's for people that kind of have a hard time with ancestral magic or don't have some kind of direct lineage or source, and they're, you know, it's about creating or customizing your own, you know, through the reverence and through the devotion or respect of a lot of other things. I think a lot of people think it's just kind of this willy-nilly burn everything down, you know, masturbate a sigil, and which is kind of the cartoon that it's turned into.
It does, and I feel like a cartoon.
And I think it's like, it's like going, it's joining an anarchy club. You know what I mean? It's like calling yourself a chaos magician and, you know, wearing that uniform is ridiculous. It's like, it's not.
The uniform is very close to goth.
Or like, you know, the cyberpunk.
Chaos magician.
I mean, it is a uniform.
It is.
You know? Like, and people would argue, and I've talked to people that would argue that chaos magic is a defined thing. It is the Phil Hine, you know, it is the Peter Carroll thing. But I disagree. I think, much like punk rock, it's an attitude. It's not a mohawk and a leather jacket.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that the chaos magic attitude, you know, the ability that you like, or the concept of like trying something until it works. You know, if it works, you keep doing it.
Yeah,
it's very pragmagical. That's been around forever.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, it's an old idea that, that we had stopped paying attention to, and stuff had started to get kind of stale. So when chaos magic happened, when, you know, Phil Hine and Peter Carroll wrote their books, and all that stuff sort of came out into the public, it, I think it helped reinvigorate a lot of stuff. I think a lot of people were suddenly realizing, like, oh yeah, it doesn't have to be, you know, you don't, if it works, you do it.
Yes. And it's hard to, because I do think there's a devotional aspect that needs addressing with it. I think that it's important to, if you're going to be fucking with all these unseen things and, from other realms, like, there is a devotion that needs to be there. And I think there is, people mistake that in chaos magic for, hey, fuck it. If it works, I'm just going to take it and do it. You know what I mean? It's almost like, I swear, like...
Well, hold on, hold on.
There's a book in the future that I'm going to write called Crass Magic. And it's
about... Crass Magic.
It's about, you know, the punk rock ethos is chaos magic, you know?
Right.
And it's not like, sure, the Sex Pistols and Ramones might have been cited for starting it, but Tom Waits is punk as fuck. You know what I mean?
Tom Waits is punk as fuck.
Like, it's become so much more than just... The attitude has become so much more than just the, you know, the three-chord structure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, so, okay, hold on. We totally got off track.
Sorry.
What happened to Disinfo? Give us...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Give us, like, the brief... Because I know you've talked about this a lot. I know that
so
it's been written
about...
So I
had that on Pragmagic, and we talk about it.
And the briefest version of it is...
But the briefest version is that copyright. Disinfo got fucked because people were, you know, kind of taking pictures. I think Thad used the example of Doctor Strange. Like, use a picture of Doctor Strange on a, you know, article about sorcery. And imagine doing that for years. So you get copyright struck for, like, years. Three articles a day for years of content. And it was just... there's no manpower. Nobody was getting paid, really. Like, it wasn't... It had become just this kind of fucking dark web message board for trolls for a little bit. Not in the articles, but in the comment sections. I mean, when Thad turned comments off for the articles, I was like, it's coming any day now. I think it just got too unruly, too crazy. And nobody was getting paid, man. No one, you know, like...
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah.
How is that possible? There must have been advertising revenue. There must have been...
Oh, yeah, yeah. There was. There's... I don't know. Thad is really the guy to talk to. And we do talk about it on Pragmagic. All
So basically, copyrights killed
Disinfo. And there was this other weird... I was kind of caught up, too. There was the real juicy stuff. And I think Thad talked about this on another podcast, but I forgot to talk to him about it, even though I was involved in it on my podcast, was there was this rogue contributor where he was coming in to, like, help with the marketing, and he would write these kind of... these articles stylized as an article, but really they were ads. And so the first time I saw this, I wrote a scathing thing to the writer, or to Thad. I was like, how could you allow this? This is an art. This is an ad, you know? This is bullshit. Uh-huh. It's deceiving, blah, blah, blah. And Thad was like, yeah, we're just experimenting, you know? We're trying to work. It was, you know, I totally understood after I talked to Thad about it. Mm-hmm. But the writer of that article would go on to, like, take over the social media.
Uh-oh.
And hold it ransom from, like, all the disinfo knots.
Uh-huh.
Would hold the login for the, you know, the WordPress engine.
Oh, no.
Ransom. And this was, like, the copyright strike thing came in completely sideways.
Uh-huh.
Like, all of this shit was going on. Like, it was imploding. And the copyright strike came in from nowhere, as if it wasn't going to burn already. It's just like, you know.
Oh, man.
So, you know, Thad jokes about this, too. You know, he's like, I often wonder if it was, you know, got hexed, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and, yeah, there was a lot of... There was a lot of bad sauce in that.
Well,
in that, you know.
Well, it's gonna barbecue. Be missed. It's too bad it's gone. It was a great resource for a while.
And yeah, absolutely. There's a few sites that I think kind of inch towards it. You know, Reality Sandwich or something.
Uh-huh.
Rune Soup even, but even that's you know more.
That's
of
more
a
just
blog.
One guy. Yeah.
And so that's what I wanted We the Hallowed to use. We have, you know, this website,
mm-hmm.
and we were putting out, you know, compilations and putting out original content, writing mm-hmm. all of this stuff. And it was like, well, like, let's get yourself and Alex and other writers and people just to kind of contribute. And knowing what I know from working with disinfo, you know, avoid copyright issues, but also, like, I see an AdSense idea to be more fair with, you know, compensation once mm-hmm. it hits a point. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
It was a good testing or learning ground for kind of running your own...
Things to not do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you looking for more writers?
Always, yeah, right. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And the only thing is, you know, just a kind of intent about some metaphysical... Mm-hmm. thing behind whatever, but you know, okay. post photographs, like,
yeah.
we've got a folklore about it that's great, you know.
Oh,
And we're back. That was a Dakota Slim song.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
It was... We'll just... Yeah.
Yeah.
It was off Cactus Crown.
Yeah. There'll
be a
link...
I haven't decided which one yet.
Yeah. We'll figure that out later.
Yeah.
But there'll be a link to Cactus Crown in the show notes, too, so you can go buy it and support musicians.
Well, I also, too, I'm doing a sub-podcast on Pragmagic called Audiomancy.
Uh-huh.
And I've put out... as an episode, the full We the Hallowed audio sigil we did was like a compilation that a member did with bands or musicians within the collective, but experimental in that it, you know, it was woven together as a singular thing. And so the last Audiomancy thing I did, which is the last episode that's on Pragmagic, was Cactus Crown in full.
Oh.
Yeah.
Cool.
So the album in full, as it was meant to be listened to, because it's all tied together and, you know, meant to be listened to in one foul swoop.
Cool.
But, yeah.
So, we just had something that we were going to talk about when we came back, and I was like, save that, save that.
Oh, shit.
What were
yeah, so the Disruption Generator.
The Disruption Generator with Eric Millar.
Eric J. Millar. Yeah, so we were talking about Eric J. Millar. Me, our friend Alex from the Alex Cast, is working with Eric in different facets. He's illustrating for me. I've been working on this book / comic for over a decade.
Mm-hmm.
It's been my precious, you know, like masterwork, you know, blah, blah, blah kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
And I've used this new... huge life shift, this huge seismic shift to be like, you know what, fuck it, I'm gonna finish the draft of it finally, after, you know, getting fucking drawers and boxes full of research and all notes and stuff, and I'm gonna write about doing it. Cause I was inspired by this Steinbeck book where he's writing East to Eden at the time. But to help motivate him to do so, he wrote letters to his friend every day before he'd sit down and write the book. And I was using that kind of as a guiding post for WeTheHollow.org. It's called Zozobra. And writing about all the shit that's happening in my life in this kind of like blue collar, you know, low class artistry, what it's taking somebody to kind of get the wherewithal to do that on top of everything.
Because,
you know, Steinbeck, like, he's talking about, like, oh, I had some tea today. Oh, my wife was a little weird, you know? like, he was already set up. Like, that was his job, is just to write this book.
Yeah.
And so my thing is, you know, going through all the crazy bullshit day to day and some heavy stuff, and Eric is illustrating that article.
Oh.
So we've done three so far, where he's, you know, it's just, he's amazing. He's a brilliant guy.
So then the...
So
how does that tie into the Disruption Generator?
So it all ties in because it's We the Hallowed, you know.
Uh-huh.
But the Disruption Generator, so when Eric and I got together and I offered the platform to him, you know, to like, you know, do your thing, whatever you want to do. And he was, you know... His first thought was he was going to construct an Oracle deck, but he was going to do it in a way where he'd use a random word generator, and whatever word it picked up, he was going to illustrate a card.
And that would be...
And he would post it on We the Hallowed, Monday through Friday, a day.
Uh-huh.
And it was like 40 or 60 in where he was, you know, I'm finally going to cap it at 120-something. You know, almost double what... regular Arcana, you know, tarot deck would be.
That's a huge deck.
And so now we're seeing the end. He has them all finished, and Alex printed the decks, and so on the last episode I had with Alex, we actually used it for the first time, like,
so
used it to read.
It actually exists.
Oh, and it's amazing. It's brilliant to be on the ground up of this Oracle deck, and I love it because it's so free of the archetypal ideologies that come, you know,
right,
the
because it's
heavy
just, it's random
academia.
Words.
Yeah.
How does he pick the words? Like, what are they?
Some word generator he uses, like, online or something.
Uh-huh, but what's the most unusual word, for instance?
Well, like, he had... The last few were private. Crater. You know, there's like Guru. There's, you know, it's completely random, but not in the most beautiful sense, you know. It's kind of from the school of Burroughs and Geisen, like the cut up, you know, where they're finding the third mind. They're finding like the collective idea of this like beautiful collaboration, and it's just kind of randomized, but they're finding the language within the randomization and cutting up and making new things from some stuff. So,
well, I can't wait to see that.
It's going
to
be great. Yeah, and we have plans for, you know, printing. He wants to do it as a book, some like bibliomancy kind of way of doing the cards, where you kind of flip through and use a journal. And so we're going to, we haven't announced it at all, but basically we're in the process of, he's talking about doing a short run of actual hardcover books, and we're going to test the waters.
That sounds cool.
And break into more of the publishing side of With Halid. So
that sounds really cool.
Yeah, it's exciting, man. I love it. Like, I love everyone. A part of We the Hollowed is just bringing so much. I mean, you, that Emerald Tablets, like, even just, like, reposting shit that you've done and having it within that vicinity is, like, exactly what I loved about this info.
Yeah.
You know?
That's
so
cool. That's really awesome.
It's completely disparate, you know? But there is a tether.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, I look forward to seeing what happens with We the Hollowed as it goes along. I think it's got a lot of potential, and I think that, because you got Stephanie Quick writing for you now.
Yeah, that's pretty
exciting.
Was great. Yeah, no,
she's a fascinating lady.
No, she's great, you know.
Yeah.
Coming from that anthropological kind of side.
Mm-hmm.
And she's been doing these 101 posts, which I think are just so necessary for all the stuff we get into, you know, because we're original content. Like, you know that. Like, everything that we've all been participating in has been from us.
Right.
Has been things that we've been doing. And I think the hard thing is it can be a little lost in the weeds for people that are kind of coming to We the Hollowed and checking it out and being like, what the fuck is going on?
Like, where do I find, you know, what's the direction or,
So she's been doing, you know, on her own volition, she's been doing these, like, 101 articles where she did one on liminality, and the last one she did was on sex magic. And there's just beautiful little, you know, articles kind of
What is Sex Magic 101? Is that sort of like the birds and the bees of sex magic?
No, it's more like talking about the confluence between the occult and sexuality. And But, you know, very concise. And so we want to... I've been talking to her about, you know, putting another... Like, what I did with the disruption generator was I made a little sub-web site where all the cards are collected and all the articles and stuff talked about it. And I want to do one for 101, and like your thing on the Emerald Tablets would be in there, and these like very concise, like
introductory
things,
like how to get started with this, how to get your feet wet with this particular.
It's important, you know. It's really easy for us to get lost in the, you know, crazy ratitudes, as I call them, of, you know, the occult. And to me, the biggest point of all of it was to make it less of a, not less of an academic thing, but less more of a approachable kind of situation, you know.
Yeah.
Using art as the vector for that, but, you know, it would be great if it got educational.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds great. Well, let's wrap stuff up. Let's talk about, like, how do people find you online?
Well, you can go to... My personal website is KeatsRoss.com, but I urge everyone to check out We the Hollowed, and that's WeTheHollowed.org. My music is at DakotaSlim.net. And God, what else? Oh, and obviously Pragmagic.
.edu.
Pragmagic.com. And
right.
Pragmagic is, you know, my... That's my favorite. It's more of my audio grimoire. So that's a way to get to know what I'm interested in or what I'm doing or who I'm talking to. That's the All podcast right. is the way to do it.
That sounds good. Well, thanks so much for being so patient with me
and
waiting
ditto.
This long to be on my podcast.
Oh, you kidding, man? It's such an honor. I really appreciate
well,
it.
Well, I'm glad that I was able to finally motivate myself to have you on. I know that my episodes have been releasing really slowly lately, and I need to kind of...
Me too. I got to have you back, actually.
Yeah, I'd love to. We talked to when I was on your podcast. Mm-hmm. We talked about we talked about something about like a continuing series that you wanted to have me do. So we should figure out what that was.
So it ties back into the educational thing. Uh-huh. But Prag Magic is poised to turn into a video kind of medium. So not just podcasting, but I want it to be, you know, a YouTube channel where we'll have...
I have a great idea.
Educational things.
It could be occult interviews in a hot tub. We could sit in a hot tub, drink champagne, mm-hmm. talk about the occult.
Yeah, I don't think that'll scare anybody off. I think it'll keep us elitist.
All we need now is a hot tub.
Right, yeah. No, we should just do a bathtub.
Waterproof.
You should do a bathtub and an apartment.
Sitting on opposite sides.
Yeah.
Like one of those old tin...
Not even a clawfoot.
Yeah.
Just stuck
like
in the corner.
Big old tub.
Yeah. We'll have the shower on because the faucet doesn't work.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe lapels on our chest hair.
Yeah, we need some waterproof mic. Do they make waterproof microphones?
I don't know. They got Ziploc bags. And just put them on.
Ghetto hot tub.
Yeah.
Occult podcast. The next phase.
Love it.
All right. Well, thanks so much for being on, and we will totally see you again.
Yeah. Man, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for listening to My Alchemical Bromance. You can find us on the web at myalchemicalbromance.com. You can find us on Stitcher and iTunes and YouTube and maybe Spotify. You can support us if you'd like to. In fact, we would love for you to support us through the Arnomancy Patreon. You can find a link in the show notes or on the website. It's patreon.com/arnomancy for just $1 a month. Tune in next time and see you soon.